I'm in the process of moving. So my bookcases behind me are now empty, and it's lined with boxes rather than books. In the meanwhile, I thought maybe I should do something different, do this sort of an extra episode, and talk about personal experiences, or to be more specific, a couple of examples of personal experiences that are connected to the kind of things that we've been exploring throughout this series. Now, I've been consciously trying to keep the topics of this series, or the content of this series rather, as sort of third-person objective, discussions about ideas and history and those kind of things, and left out the more personal side of things, at least in the main episodes. And I don't actually know whether that was a good decision or not. I think it needed to be, at least in the first season, but I think now and then it would be interesting to sort of peer behind the strict content and see the more personal aspect of what went into the kind of content that that I've been writing. Oh, by the way, this is what I sound like when I'm speaking off script and just, blurting things out from the top of my head rather than just having this straight stuff just written out and for me to sort of look into. Well, to be more specific, to sort of speak without a live audience, which is a big deal, by the way, because when you speak with a live audience and you can look at them, you are, in a sense, having a conversation, even if the other side is communicating to me non-verbally. So that gives me a very important cues as to the wording that I'm going to use and what I'm going to speak about and all of those things. So without that, I tend to feel more lost when I speak, which is why when I actually lecture or preach in church settings, I don't have scripts because they actually distract me from being able to communicate effectively, or at least I feel that way. Of course, having a clearly outlined plan, at least in my head, enables me to communicate in that sort of setting. So if I go there without any plans or inadequately sort of planned talk, then I still screw up. But you know what I mean. It's a very different thing to speak with a live audience than just speak into the camera or speak into the microphone without any sort of that cue. So that's one of the reasons why when I'm doing a podcast like this, I have a script ready. This time I don't, because I'm just going, maybe I should just talk about some of the things that I witnessed personally and how that connects with the kind of things that we've been sort of looking over, right? So where should I begin? So for the first couple of years, maybe 3 years for my undergraduate university studies, I was, you could say I was an agnostic, and an agnostic that's, well, it depends on how you see it. So for some people, that's also sort of what's called a soft core atheist or a negative atheist. And by that, what it means is that it's not like a person's out there saying there's no God, but more like there's not enough reasons, rational or intellectual, conceptual reasons for me to believe that there is God. It's not that I'm positively saying that there is no God. It's just I can't say that there is God. That's the sort of thing, and that usually flows quite straight from agnosticism, which basically says I don't know. Like I don't know of any things that will convince me to say there is God or there is no God. That kind of thing, and that was very close to the position that I held at least in the first couple of years. Possibly three during my university years, but my family background was actually Christian, and I tremendously respected and still do respect. I mean, they are probably the people that I respect the most, even now. Among those who are living, at the very least, I tremendously respected and respect my parents and many other Christians that were in my life, because I had the, I guess some people could say fortune, I would say blessing, of having people who really are genuine. You know what I mean? Because there are people who call themselves Christians, and but you they're the kind of people that you just don't want to hang out with. But you may remember from one of the episodes where I say they may sort of differ in values and opinions from you, but they have this sort of integrity and a sense of, you know, caring and love and that kind of thing that just makes you respect them and make you feel, you know, welcome, even if they differ from you. You know what I mean? And that's what that's how my parents are, and that's how some of the people, some of the Christians that I knew in my life were. So I respected Christian beliefs, and I had tremendous inspiration from the Christian gospel. But at that time, intellectually, I said, I respect that belief. I think it's inspiring, but I don't know whether there's God. You know, it'd be very interesting to find that, you know, God speaks to people and all that. But is there? Because, and so a lot of the questions that I've been asking in the first season, stuff like, well, is there any need for God when, you know, sciences can explain everything, or you know, there can be viable philosophical positions that don't need God, and that's quite true even now. What do I do with, you know, the book of Genesis, the narrative about creation and all of those things. So now those questions are the sort of questions that I had. You can sort of figure out what how my position changed by actually going through my series, because the basic sort of outline of the position that I would reach, which is what I sort of outlined in this series, as well as in my the previous book on philosophy of religion, God at the Crossroads of Worldviews, that was formed, or at least it was the beginnings of it were formed during those years. More simply put, I realized that, well, maybe I had this idea of God, perhaps not wrong, but it's not adequate. It's misguided, or it has some misunderstandings about it that make me think that maybe I think there's no God, because the idea of God isn't—it's not as what it should be. So yeah, in that sense, it's wrong. It's wrong. First episode of the third season, when I the episode titled "What Do You Mean There's No God?" I briefly, well, not briefly, it was like 30 minutes long or so, but I went over the kind of missteps that one can make about thinking about God. I also went through that for the entire first season, so you can check those out. But anyway, I realized that, well, in various different worldviews and philosophies and religion, there is still this concept of reality, right? Even if you are sort of a relativist about everything, it's like, truth is sort of relative to where you are. You can't be completely relativist, at least not if you sort of think that science works and technology works, and there is actually this world that no matter like how you want the world to be, like there is still something that that's out there that basically says, well, you know, not everything is going to be exactly how you want it, because there is this hard reality. Then even if like other people have their sort of views on truth and that's sort of looking at different aspects of reality, but unless you want to go complete, like the world is just however I think it is, and it doesn't matter how I think it just molds to my touch, which is sort of crazy megalomaniac kind of thing. But unless you go like that extreme, you still have this conception of reality. And if you're being more philosophical or even scientific about it, we think there's this structures and principles to reality, and that's where it comes. Reality is sort of like speech, and reality sort of unfolds like a story, and there is something that's worth sort of searching for. There is this principle or reality from which which sciences are just studying and philosophy is pondering about, and our search for like truth and goodness and morality and beauty all has some connection with this. And all of that's what Christians and Jews and Muslims and other theistic worldviews would call God. Now, there is this other element to it, very important element, that perhaps non-theistic sort of worldviews would not think about, or maybe say we don't see it. But that aspect is that this reality, this comprehensive and ultimate reality and the truth of all things, speaks with us and engages with us personally. And for me, I realized, I concluded that that's where the dividing question is. And you probably are going, yeah, you talked about all of this throughout this series. Where is the personal experience part? Well, okay, so I'm going to get to it. So the other things, what I've been sort of going over is more of a, you know, it's something you can study and think about, right? It's an intellectual and conceptual journey. You can read books on philosophy and books in religion, and hopefully books in sciences. For example, for me, like, I wouldn't be able to study like cosmology and physics like the actual scientists do, because I don't have the necessary level of training in the mathematics and in that technical sort of things. But you know, you should still read a more general audience stuff to know what scientists have been discovering in biology and cosmology and in psychology was one of my majors, by the way. And all of those things would go into our understanding, right, of reality and what that means for reality that like speaks and how reality that some people understand as God and all of those things. But that's still, you know, it's you think through it, you can learn it. But what about experience? Because to say that, you know, there is this personal aspect that you engage with and it will speak back to you, and then you can walk with this, walk with God, and all of that language is essentially experiential. You relate to something or someone personally by having a personal relationship, and personal relationship is, well, personal. It's experiential. It's that aspect of it. So how do you get to that? And I've described throughout this series, I described the process of how that works. But the thing that I didn't really go into is that, did I also sort of experience the kind of things that I described, at least when I was going through the narratives of Genesis? So, oh, by the way, I don't remember whether I mentioned this earlier or not, but this is how I speak off script. I think I did. See, this is what happens when I'm speaking off script. Can't quite remember what I said and what I didn't say. Anyway, what's a good example? Well, I'm going to give you a more like straightforward example, all right? People who've heard me speak in other settings, like in churches, probably most likely heard this example, because it's as I said, it's the most straightforward example. So during the years that during those years that I talked about when I was in first year university, in fact, My father was called into ministry. So for people who don't speak Christianese, right? What that means is that, okay, let me break it down. My father was praying. In fact, my parents were praying. And there was a sense, right? And it could be a sort of a thought that came to you. Again, check out my series on what do you mean God speaks to you, or the episodes about Abraham, the earlier episodes, where I go through in more specific details what that could mean. But, you know, God spoke to my father, and I would say it's more of like a thought came to him, and he was reading the scripture, and some passages sort of struck to him saying that this is meaningful to you. Some of the other verses important, yeah, you can learn from it, but this verse means for you. So I think it was a combination of that. Anyway, and basically boiled down to God saying to my father, I want you to become a pastor. And that was a problem because he was like 50 years old, and you know, he had a career, and well, not quite a career in the sense that he, if you know about immigrant life, right? And it's back in the years when countries like Korea were not as, shall I say, respected in the West. Nowadays, I bring the Korean culture, I talk about Korean culture, and everyone, at least my generation and younger, go crazy. Like, oh, BTS and K-pop and all those Korean foods and a whole bunch of other things, right? Anyway, back in those days, a lot of the things that my parents study, because they both have university degrees, my father has master in, I think, international business or something like that. Anyway, none of that counted. So my parents had to, you know, work through, as a lot of Koreans do, and maybe you've seen this sitcom or this comedy show, Kim's Convenience, and which is a show about, you know, these Korean immigrants running a convenience store, and that was quite true of a lot of Korean immigrants. My parents ran a convenience store, and then they stopped that, and my father got a job at this company. But either way, it just meant that, you know, he has work. He's the income earner, and his older son is now in university. Now I pay for my own tuitions, but you know, there are more stuff other than just tuitions when your children are going through university, and you know, you need to pay for rent, and you need all of those things. But there it is when God says, like, I want you to become a pastor. So my father said, no, that's crazy. Maybe I'm just imagining this thing. As he prayed, he said back to God saying, okay, if this is you, like, if this is you really personally speaking to me, right? Then can you confirm it? Like, can you confirm it with like other people? And, then what happened was that, and I checked because, remember, I was an agnostic, respectful of Christianity, but also, like, would openly question, or at least would be afraid to question, right? Anyway, so on that very day, my father got a phone call. Not a phone call, to be more specific, three phone calls from three different people who didn't talk to each other. And who didn't talk to my father before they called. I mean, they knew him, but they didn't talk about him and talk about this particular thing. What my pop father before, he didn't say what he heard from God, right? He was just, and he didn't even have time to, because like he just came back, he prayed and he came back, and he just kept it to himself. And maybe my mother, probably my mother, but she's not going to talk either. So they didn't talk to anyone. But these three different people, and they haven't talked to each other, as I said, called on the same day. And each of them said these very words, which was, we were praying and we had this strong sense, again, like God spoke to them, perhaps in a thought, or maybe there was an image or something as they were praying, and they said, we think, or I think, because three different people, remember, I think I have this strong sense that God is telling me to tell you that he wants you to become a pastor, right? So that was a thing, right? That's a thing. What do you do with that? But my father was still sort of nervous because, you know, he needs to earn income, and it's quite a bit to pay for tuition for a seminary, especially if it's like a non-state funded university. And, you know, why would states like fund seminaries, right? Well, that's more complicated than how I put it. But anyway, that was an issue. So about a week passes. And a week later, this lady, she knew our family quite well, came by and she said, for about a week now, because she's saying like, I've been praying, and for an entire week, God has been sort of pushing me, saying he wants you to become a pastor, and he wants me to pay for your seminary tuition. But I thought that sounded crazy, because, you know, it does sound crazy. So I've been sort of trying to ignore it for the past week, but it's been an entire week where I've been hearing the same thing every time I pray. So I just had to come and ask you, like, is this really true? And at this point, my father was too scared not to go to a seminary. So yeah, she paid for his tuitions, and that happened. That's the sort of thing that happened, and he eventually became a pastor, and I saw this, and I realized that, hey, reality can unfold in a very, very interesting way, and you can apparently speak to people, right? And you can unfold and make things to pass, and perhaps that's something. Now, I've also thought, because, you know, it's obviously not just him, because then I try the whole thing myself too, you know, which is the reason why I'm doing all of this, and that's how it is. You know, I've been thinking stuff like, hey, what if you know, as I pray and a thought comes to you, or reading this scripture or something, and this passage sticks out at you, and it's like, oh, that's for me. Maybe it's just, you know, things that happen in the unconscious, in the unconscious process. But then this is where the all the conceptual or the intellectual sort of philosophical reflection and thinking becomes important, because it provides a framework with which to understand the experience and to reflect, right? Because if you think about what we've been going about in this series so far, I said, well, reality is like a speech, and reality unfolds like a story, and you can think about it like all of reality is God speaking. It's not just, you know, some specific impossible miracle that's God speaking, and the rest is, you know, just the universe ticking like a clock. And it's like, no, everything, including every law of physics and biology and all of that, all of that's also God speaking. And what that means is that even the psychological process and the thoughts of all of that is part of God speaking. One sort of metaphor that I gave was that think of all of reality again as God's story, and how does that work? Well, think about our story. Now, remember episode one, I said there's sort of like a limit to how far the metaphor goes, because when I talk about an author writing out a story, the author's still in some world outside the story that the author writes, right? So Shakespeare writes Hamlet, but Shakespeare is in our world, whereas I say, like, every world, every conceivable world, every world is God speaking. There is no outside. So how does that work? Well, reality behaves like a story, and God speaks through all of the story. But anyway, going back to the metaphor, right? In a story, if, say, Hamlet has this monologue, right? Or in a novel, this character sort of thinks something. It is that character thinking. That's what it is in the story. And it is Hamlet sort of speaking out a monologue. It is Hamlet speaking. But at the same time, it's also Shakespeare, the author, speaking, right? But there is somewhat of a, how should I put it? A difference between a character sort of thinking things out consciously and a thought sort of appearing to them. One has less of a control or a participation, you could say, of the character in the story. So what I mean is that when in our conscious thoughts, say I consciously think about what's unfolding in history or something, where I consciously think about what I'm going to do tomorrow, it is still within like everything that God speaks, but it's also much more consciously under my control. But what's unconscious is partly me, because, you know, it's my unconscious, you could say, but also at the same time, it's also God speaking, but the important part is I have less control. So it has greater sort of room for God to communicate in ways that's beyond the things that I specifically think about. So if God's going to have a conversation, right, and God can have a conversation through, because all of reality is God speaking according to, or in the way that Christians and Jews and Muslims and a lot of like major theistic religious philosophies would think about it, but all of reality is God speaking, but the way that we would converse, it's the unconscious would be a very good medium. It wouldn't be the only medium, obviously, but it would be a very good medium of God speaking personally. So going back to what I'm talking about. So you pray, or in my case, I pray, and a thought comes to you, and maybe it's going to come through my unconscious. Then it is still God speaking, and yes, it is still unconscious, but hopefully, what we've been exploring throughout this series gives us a framework to understand why that's sort of both. Why that's God can speak and we can carry out a conversation and the conversation is meaningful. Speaking of conversation, so here's another example. I'll use mine as an example. So some years ago, my mother had this, she got this injury, right? Because she works a lot. I mean, she always has to do something, right? She's that kind of person. She always has to do something. She's always the person that people sort of look up to and say, like, what do we do? And she doesn't, like, she's not the kind of person who's very extroverted and she just leads out there, but she's just there and people just sort of turn to her and say, hey, what do we do? And because she's always able to do things and she does things all the time. But what that means is that because she's a very, physically, her physical stature is small, so her amount of labor can cause her injury. Anyway, long story short, there was an injury and she had this like constant pain, like sort of like this. She described it as sort of like this electric shock kind of pain and stabbing pain and all of that at the same time. We knew that there were at least muscle and ligament injuries, but it just seemed more. So we checked out, our family physician sent her off to a neurologist, right? And he like sort of like poked and prodded her for, if you know about, nerves, it sends electric signals, right? And it seems that that's what he measured. And he said, there's something wrong there. Like it's, apparently, there seems to be some sort of damage, like, in the nerves. And that's a problem because, like, that's not something that just gets regenerated. And that's, so he said, but I can't specify where it can be and what exactly that injury is. So he, But he thought it was significant enough that he sent her to the MRI to be scanned. But she was like, she had this periodic like sharp pains, and one day like she was coming home with my father, and I was there, and she had that pain attack, and she burst into tears, because do I have to like deal with this pain like throughout my life? And she burst into tears, and I was shocked because she doesn't cry. Like only time I saw her cry was like when my grandmother passed away. So I'm like, what's going on? And I had this thought, and then I decided, one of those, if you are, you know, Christian, or you have this religious sort of background, perhaps you know what I'm talking about. You have this impromptu sort of like two sentence prayers, like, what's up with that God, right? That's what I said, what's up with that God? And yes, I'm much older now, so I'm past the agnostic stage. I'm more of the intellectually, I can understand being agnostic, but I am more committed to, yeah, I think all of reality is God speaking, and God can speak personally, and He has spoken, for example, to my father personally, and apparently He does speak to people personally, and I'm going to live betting on that. That's the closest way I can put it. So I'm going to live betting on that. I'm going to live betting that this God that speaks to people also came to us as this person, Jesus Christ, right? And He died and He rose, all of that, all of that. I'm betting on that. I use this phrase because it's not like all of that can like be deductively and scientifically proven. It's, which is not to say that I just believe it and that's it. I'm saying there are a lot of reasons to believe. I think one of the episodes I put it this way: there's still an ambiguity. There are reasons to believe, but there are reasons that people can, like good reasons that people can say it's not good enough, and some people say no, it is good enough. So there is arguable room, right? But what that means is that in that arguable room, I want to bet on that. So that would be my position anyway. So that's why I said to God, saying, "What's up with that God?" Right? And then a thought comes to me. That's in my experience, that's also how God speaks. Again, maybe something that happens in the unconscious. It doesn't matter. That's not relevant. That's merely how the process of God conversing in various different ways. And that's how it came. Like, and this is like this. So what was the thought? This was, this is what happened. A thought comes and he says, why don't you pray for her like right now? Like right now. Actually began with, why don't you pray for her? And I responded, this is actually an interesting and notable sign of maybe God is speaking to you. Like suddenly you are carrying through a conversation and you know that the other side is saying something that you don't want to admit, but you know it's true. So what I mean? Well, he says, why don't you pray? And I immediately said back, I have been praying. And the voice sort of speaks back saying, no, I mean, pray for her right now, because right now is the meaningful time, right? Because she's in pain. Pray for her right now, instead of, you know, giving excuses not to. Or are you afraid that, you know, this won't do anything? Like, why don't you, instead of that, why don't you go and pray? So that sounded true. At least that sounded fair for me to ignore. So I went and I prayed. And obviously the sense was also strong. It's strong enough that when a sense is, or a thought is so strong that you have to argue back, but it's so strong again that when you argue back, your argument isn't strong enough to sort of beat it back. That's something that you might want to pay attention to, even if you don't believe in God, right? If there's that inner sort of dialogue that happens, and I don't know, for me, like how I would put that is that reality is speaking to you, truth is speaking to you, and that's literally what it means to speak to God, at least in the context of Christianity. But even if you don't want to phrase it that way, if something speaks to you and you have to argue back, but it's But it's what it speaks is so strong that not only do you need to argue back, but your argument is beaten back, then you might want to pay attention to that. Especially because if your argument is beaten back because you know it's true, you might want to pay attention to that. But this one's a more like stranger example, I suppose. But anyway, I prayed. And her pain subsided, which was interesting. Then she said, oh, I feel fine now. But, you know, she feels fine now, but what about tomorrow, right? But afterwards, she didn't feel she still had the muscle, you know, pain, ligament injury pain, but not the, like, electric shock kind of pain, ever since then. So she was hopeful because, you know, Christian, she does believe that God can act to heal people, right? God can act to heal through, like, heal people through medicine, because medicine draws on, you know, laws of nature and laws of physiology and all of those things. And that's, again, remember, God speaking for Christianity. But also, God can work through things that's beyond what we understand medically. But anyway, so she said maybe there's something to it. So she went and took the MRI. This was like quite some time later, because it takes a while. Especially in Canada, when you wait for a test to sort of become available. Anyway, so she took the MRI and the scans came back and they said, "Oh, we can't find anything wrong with your nerve system. We do find that there's some like muscle injuries, but nothing in your nerves." So, is there a medical explanation for it? Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if our medical science has advanced, then we can probably find some sort of process. Still, that would still be from God. The important part is the conversation and then what happened, right? That's what it means for people to, and for God to, at least in Christianity, to personally relate to each other and see what God does. Okay. One more example. Let's go back to my father. So he became a pastor. So you may remember, because I left off I basically wrapped up the life story of Abraham. We have sort of like the epilogue and the story of Isaac that's going to come along sometime after the process of moving So that will be later, but we wrapped up the story of Abraham, and you may have sort of realized that some of the things that God sort of promises and does, while amazing, can take a long time, and there's a lot of trials involved, and that's just how it is in the Bible, right? Abraham is just the prototypical example of it that happens in Genesis, but you have different variations of that theme throughout the Bible, throughout like many, many, many characters. Why is that so? Well, we'll hopefully explore that more and more throughout this series. But to put it in a more shorthand version of it is because that's how life is. Life has hardship, and something that's worth doing and worth accomplishing and worth building requires the kind of challenges and trials for whatever it is that you do. To be forged and hammered into something that's strong enough, right? So anyway, for Abraham, he was like waiting for his son, right? For the promised son to be born and all of that. My father, you would think, well, you know, wow, God spoke and somebody paid for his tuitions and everything should go fine now. And it's like, nope. Because then what happened was that as he was graduating from seminary, he's trying to get work, people basically said, a lot of churches basically said, you know, we think what you're doing, we think your story is really amazing, but we have no need of you. There was the summary. One pastor that knew him well, even before he became he went into the seminary, basically said, there is no church that's going to need you. Because, well, here's the reason. He wasn't being kind about it, that's true, but he was still trying to tell him the truth, and the truth was this. So my father was a first generation Korean immigrant in Canada. So, I mean, his English is great for a first generation immigrant, but he's an immigrant and he lacks in that department. And so any like English speaking mainstream Canadian churches, they won't need you because you just won't fit in. And but the immigrant churches, like Korean churches, what they want are like people who's been trained in Korean seminaries or something. Or at the very least, all of these churches would want someone who's been trained from an early age, and you can't speak English and you haven't been trained in Korean seminary and you're inexperienced and you're already old. So it's not about this young guy just young person just learning the new things. It's you're already old. So no church will find you an attractive candidate for a pastor. And then there was the added issue of my father being again prayer, and he has this sense of let's bring like different people groups together, and because if you know Toronto, that which is where I lived, a lot of different ethnic groups, communities, diaspora immigrant communities around the city and Canada. So let's bring them together. And for a lot of churches, they were basically asking, what does that even mean? How do you even do that? You sound crazy, that kind of thing. So for quite a bit of years, he didn't have a place to go. So he had to pray and figure out, like, God did this and he led him. What do you do with that if doors don't seem to be opening up? And it took years. Again, it's a journey, and I can't go through all of the things that happened in the journey, but it does end somewhere. Like, it does end up somewhere. It bears fruits. It's about, okay, it's here's this impossible but possibly meaningful journey. Take it, listen, and see what God speaks. Perhaps you'll get it wrong, but you won't know until you actually go and try. And when you try, what happens? Because remember what we've sort of repeatedly said in this series. The primary attribute of God speaking to you is truth. So if you follow the voice, what that voice says, was it true? And in Christianity, truth is also closely knit with beauty and goodness. So did it bring about something that is meaningful and good? Something that brought life to people, right? So it took many, many years, but it has brought a very interesting sort of ministry. And this ministry, if I were to describe it in a very short way, is that you have all of these different sort of communities, right? Some of these communities, immigrant people, are from countries and cultures that are predominantly like non-Christian. And some are even from countries that are, you know, very religiously or politically repressive. And Christianity, by the way, we probably won't notice because we live in a country that's so religiously, you know, free. There's freedom of religion. But in the rest of the world that's outside of the West, right, Christianity is one of the most severely repressed and persecuted religion in the world. Now, that might be hard for you, for those of you living in Europe and at least Western Europe and the United States to imagine, or Canada to imagine, but that's how it is. Check out North Korea, for example, or even China recently under Xi Jinping and all of those countries. Anyway, so some of these people are from those countries, and they were persecuted, and they're just like handful of individuals, and they don't know what to do. They're Christians, they want to follow Christ, but they don't speak English as well, and they want to worship and follow Jesus in their own language, in the context of their own culture, instead of, you know, assimilating to a foreign culture, even if it's a nice culture like the mainstream Canadian culture and all that. And the idea was, hey, why don't like larger churches sort of say, go to them and say, hey, what do you need? You don't need to like join us. You don't need to become like part of us and follow our lead. if you want to begin and if you want to set up a community of your own that can speak your own language and enable you to sort of follow Jesus in your own language and in the context of your culture and share your life with people who have the same sort of culture or your family and relatives, what do you need? Do you need fellowship? Do you need a place to gather together, or do you need other people who have similar experiences who can sort of walk with you and all that kind of support? So instead of missionary kind of thing and all of the preconceptions that's involved there, let's have something like an alliance, a circle of people, a fellowship where these people can be supported and they will be given the kind of leadership and the environment, not as a like a larger sort of group sort of telling them what to do, but in the setting of in the setting of equals, right? Some people who some churches and some communities are in the process of growing, perhaps, but in the end, equals, sort of, round table kind of thing. Let's have an alliance where those churches can also and those communities can also grow in their own language and in across Canada, right? Because it grew beyond Toronto. The organization Canada Mosaic Christian Alliance will soon have its. I don't know, it's nearly what, 12 years anniversary. And there's dozens and dozens of different communities and community churches, faith communities, speaking in, again, dozens and dozens of languages, also reaching out to other people from similar sort of linguistic and cultural background that's suffering. I think one group, for example, are the Yazidis. If you don't know who they're the group of sort of a Muslim offshoot in Iraq, and they were heavily persecuted and as a people, right? Not just as a religion, like just simply as a people. They were the so-called Islamic State, which actually was more like, let's kill everyone other than the most hardline and terrorizing version of that religion that we can get, right? Yeah, so I think they're called ISIS, Daesh in the Middle East. Anyway, they tried to exterminate them and they came. A lot of these people greatly suffered and came to Canada, Toronto, and the Arabic-speaking church that became part of this alliance also reached out to them. Some of them became Christian, yes, because there's this conversation. But even if not, it's like a community. Like, hey, come join us, and we can have meals together, that kind of thing. So that kind of outreach too. So it does all of that. And my father, who the pastor said, no church will need you because you don't have the skills to fit in any of the existing church. And years back then, and I remember him telling me about it, telling all of us about it, he said, he responded to that pastor saying, you're right, like, you're speaking the truth. No church will need me. But if something does come out from all of this, then by your own words, you will know that God did something. And that's how it works. So this is these are some of the examples of personal experience that I had. That informs the kind of things, among other things, but informs the kind of things that we've been exploring in this series. So this is the extra bonus episode. I'm sorry for this rambling sort of style. This is how I sort of ramble, especially if there's no one in front of me to give me the cues of how I should sort of change my wording or the speed of my talk and all of that. So hopefully this wasn't too off-putting, but hopefully this was something interesting and gave you a better idea of who it is that you're listening to in all of the other episodes. So next episode, again, this is going to slow down, I'm afraid to say. It's my episode has been slowing down for the past several months, but partly because of the moving process, which has been going on for a while because we are looking for the house and all of that. But also because I'm trying to work this into a book, because that was the original plan. The book is the primary thing. Podcast series is sort of like a prototype. It's like a prototype rough draft. I think I mentioned this before, of the book. And now I have enough material for more than enough. Hopefully I can sort of shrink it a bit. But at least for the book that I'm going to make into a proposal and try to find the publisher, because I'm not going to self-publish, obviously. I'm going to find the publisher who will invest in my work and publish. So that's going to take some time. So the next episode, probably next month, I would say. So it will appear when it appears. But until then, I already sort of wrapped up a important section in my previous episode by wrapping out the story of Abraham. And I wanted to complement that with my own story, or segments of my own story and my family story, to sort of tell you, hey, this, I describe and I go over the stories of the people in the Bible, and I say these people, it's about real people, because these are the kind of things that happen to people, real people, because at least I hope I am. I am a real person, and my family, they're real people. And we go through similar things and similar sort of experiences. So until then, if you enjoy this series, please follow, subscribe, you know what I'm talking about. And there you go. I'll see you next, or I'll speak with you next time.